Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Now, you're very welcome back. 51551, that is our text. Now, do you like having visitors to your house? Do you like having house guests and not always knowing how long they might be staying for? What about offering room in your house to someone who could really benefit from it? Well, somebody did this. Will Foley is his name and his wife, and they read an article in local press in Dublin last year, and they started thinking about it and they decided to do something about that to a stranger in need. Will Foley is on the line. Good morning, Will.
How you doing?
How you doing? This is an incredible story and a very kind thing that you've done, first of all. Will you tell us a little bit about, I suppose, the situation of the woman who was in that article that you read last year, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It was last summer. I can do. So she is a refugee into Ireland, coming from Uganda, and had been in direct provision going through the asylum seeker process for a number of years, and had gotten her status. She'd gotten her refugee status and had been looking for somewhere to live in Dublin, and was struggling, as many people do, regardless, I think, of where you're from. The housing market is not good at the moment.
For sure.
And she was studying in DCU. She was studying a master's in DCU and working in Dublin and travelling at that time up and down from a direct provision centre in Tullamore. So incredibly long days, and she basically had done a piece in a local paper in Dublin, just talking about the struggles that she was having and trying to find a place and all this sort of stuff, and that really a big challenge for her was being so far away in terms of trying to find somewhere to live, and that she was just trying to find somewhere and was struggling. So yeah. My wife had read the article and kind of approached me about it and said, look, you know, we have space in the house and stuff like that. We could help her out. You know, she's looking for somewhere short term, really, to then be able to set herself up long term. But I think for both myself and my wife, knowing the housing market and knowing the way things were going, there was no guarantee it would be short term. You know, like she might come in for a month and find somewhere. She might come in for, as it has been now, nearly a year, and still be looking for somewhere to live and stuff like that. So my wife kind of reached out to the journalist and got contact with her and, you know, exchanged some messages. They met up in person in city centre kind of after work one day, and then she came out to the house to see the house, and myself and her had a conversation and stuff like that, and, you know, she moved in, same as any tenant. We set up a rent agreement and all that kind of thing, and she moved in and has been living here for nearly the last year now.
Yeah, and as you say, you it's sort of an indefinite thing because you know the situation. You sort of know what you're getting yourself in for. That first meeting, can you tell us about that first meeting? It was your wife that went in to meet her, and that must have been a kind of a day of trepidation for all of you.
Yeah, it was an interesting interaction and stuff like that. I think. And it has been, I think, interesting to watch for Mariam, the woman that's living with us, how she has changed in the time as well, and kind of watching some of the stress that she was under kind of disappear a little bit over time. But she was very sort of soft-spoken and respectful, and kind of like wanted to get a little bit of a sense of us, and we wanted to get a little bit of a sense of her and what her plans were and what she was looking to do, and you know, where she was from, and just kind of same as I think when you're meeting anybody, you know, like for anybody who's ever shared accommodation or had housemates or anything like that, like, you know, you kind of trying to get a sense of them, you know, could you live with this person, could you get on with them? So there was a bit of trepidation, just because we didn't know her, there was no personal connection beforehand. It wasn't a friend of a friend or anything like that, so you know, you were looking for that kind of common ground and stuff like that. And one of the big things for me, or for us I should say, was we have a dog that's a relatively big dog, well, medium-sized dog, but she barks a lot, and I was like, you know, she needs to be okay with dogs. She absolutely lied and said absolutely totally fine with dogs, no problem at all. you know, and was terrified. Like,
she's,
you know, in the first day
terrified.
You're in. Yeah,
this is a collie, Bella.
Bella, yes. Yeah. And she the reason being, I suppose, for Mariam in Uganda, they don't really keep dogs as pets to any huge degree. Like, dogs that you would interact with are either guard dogs for like land, or they're stray dogs that are dangerous and you kind of avoid them. So like the natural instinct isn't, that's a cute dog, let me go over and pet it. She now loves the dog beyond all measure, and like that'll be the hardest thing when she moves out, is just not having the dog. She's grown so attached to the dog so quickly, and just is obsessed with the dog now. So like she's completely changed her tune on that front. But it was interesting in those kind of first interactions. She was more, I think, curious why we were doing it.
Yeah.
Than anything else, I would say, why we were, from her point of view, taking the risk. But I think from our point of view, we weren't really taking that much of a risk from my perspective, because, like, what was our worst case scenario? We didn't get on with her, or, you know, she misrepresented herself and we kicked her out, or we contacted, you know, the guards or the IPAS or whatever. She was still on her SUG status, you know, so it wasn't a situation where she couldn't get in trouble, so to speak, and lose her status and all that sort of stuff. So, like, there really was very little risk for us, from my point of view, in it, other than the normal risk you have of bringing a stranger into your home.
Okay. And can you tell us what your housing situation is? Because we know a little bit about hers.
Yeah, so we own the house and stuff like that. So we bought our house in 2019. It was an old house in South Dublin. And we renovated it then, thankfully, just before the pandemic. We managed to kind of get it done pretty much before the pandemic hit, and got into it in kind of June of 2020, and have been in it since. And prior to that, have been renting since. I'm from Wexford originally, and my wife's family are down in Cork, although she'd see herself more as a Dublin woman, so I should correct my record there, because when she listens back to this, I get in trouble for saying she's from Cork.
Yeah.
But, you know, both of us have been renting since we were kind of 18, 19, 20.
You know what precarious housing can feel like, yeah.
Totally, yeah. And even in my time before I moved in with Natalie, you know, was evicted, I think, 3 times in Dublin just because the landlord was selling.
Right.
So just getting notice, you've got a month, you've got 6 weeks, you've got whatever, you got to go find a place. And I've always been fortunate enough to find a place, thankfully. But, like, I would say fortunate. You know, the nature of the market was just, we were lucky and managed to get places at short notice.
Yeah. Because there's a housing disaster in the country, as the president has put it, does what you did, because you had the room, there's just the two of you and the dog, isn't there? In this scenario, in your scenario, does the old adage ring true that charity begins with a guilty conscience?
Yes and no. I don't think it was a guilty conscience necessarily of, like, we felt in some way responsible for the state of the country. I think it was more from a place of, like, if you can help, try help. Like, you know, I think my kind of philosophy in life has always been, you know, everyone sort of needs to catch a break every now and again. Sometimes you just need a little bit of luck, and you just need someone to kind of give you a lucky break. And myself and my wife are in a very fortunate position. Like, we're not struggling ourselves. Like, we own our own home. We're both working good jobs in South Dublin. We don't have any dependents or anything like that. We've plenty of other things going on in our lives.
Yeah.
But, like, in terms of our home situation, it's very stable. You know, we're not under pressure to pay our bills and stuff like that. So we were in a position to help out. And like, I should say as well, not the first person we've helped out in that sense. Like, a good friend of mine came to stay with us while he was looking to try and buy a house, just to finish saving up for his deposit and buy it. And he stayed with us for 18 months.
A year and a half.
A year and a half, yeah. He had his deposit saved in about 3 months. He was just, like, topping up the last little bit of it. But it took him almost a year and a half to find and, like, actually get keys in hand for a place, because there were so few places in his price range. So it's not that we had been down this road before, I suppose, was the thinking to a little degree.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as scary, although that was somebody that we knew very well and somebody I had lived with before. We'd lived together kind of after college and stuff.
But still, you know, it's people like their own space and their privacy.
Yeah.
They like to close the door. It was a very charitable thing to do even in that scenario. You grew up yourself in a house that brought people in as well, I believe.
Yeah. I grew up in on a farm down in Wexford and stuff like that. But we were, there was always somebody coming in to stay, and always somebody coming in to spend a bit of time as they needed to and stuff like that. That was very much the house that we had. Normally family, you know, so my siblings are a good bit older than me and stuff like that. And at various points when they were building their own homes or things had gone wrong in life for them that they weren't expecting. They moved home and were staying at home. And I had aunts and uncles that came to stay at various points. You know, my mom's brother, my uncle, stayed with us for a number of months when he was recovering from surgery and stuff like that. So, yeah, very much like there was plenty of conversations in the house of between my mom and dad of like, you know, you can't blame me for this stray. I brought in the last stray, but you were bringing in this one. So I'm not taking the blame, you know, those kind of like this one's not on me. I'm not taking this one. This is your one kind of thing. But yeah, so I've been very used to always being, I suppose, in a house where if somebody needed a place to stay and needed a bit of help that they could come and stay and you made space.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary thing, as I say, just to bring people in and out of the place. How does it work in practice? I mean, we were thinking of years ago when I used to rent myself, other people cooking at odd hours, the smells, you know, the bathroom being used, all of that sort of thing. I mean, does it work out fine?
It works out pretty well at the moment and stuff like that. Like, you have the normal kind of little bits of stress that kick in, as you say, when, you know, people go to use the washing machine when you want to use it and stuff like that. And we try and kind of put a little bit of kind of like, okay, well, look, we'll do our washing on this day just so that we know it's done and then you can use it the other days or whatever. In terms of cooking and stuff like that, my wife is an amazing cook. So she tends to do sort of batch cooking and she just, you know, she offered to kind of throw Mariam in the pot in the start of it. And that's sort of how it goes for the most part. And Mariam will do kind of bits of cooking and she cooks some local stuff for us to try as well. So there's things called chapati, which are like a snack food. It's they're very, very tasty, but very, very bad for your waistline. They're so calorie heavy, but they're kind of like a halfway between a pancake and a pita. It's probably the best way to describe them.
Good for the weekend.
Great for the weekend.
So yeah, you've learned things yourselves, in this whole experience. Yeah. Is this when you talk to people and tell people what you've done? Do they think you're mad? Friends, people, work colleagues, and so on.
They do, like, I suppose we're not too often kind of talking about the full detail of it. Like, you know, if we're talking Mariam, we tend to just be like, yeah, we've Mariam living with us and stuff like that while she's looking for somewhere to live. Some people are like, yeah, Jesus, that's great. You know, that's good for you kind of thing. Never in a million years will they do something like that. You can kind of pick that up in their voice or in their body language.
I think most people, to be fair, would probably react like that. I mean, not everyone. Yeah. Very few people can do it anyway, have the space, but it's extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, you do get the odd, like, oh, God, that's fantastic. But most people are very positive about it. And they're more curious, to be honest with you, in my experience. They're more interested to understand who Mariam is and what, you know, like, what's her story and kind of, like, what's her background. And also then, like, as you, like you're asking me here, like, you know, why we did it and what's her plans next and all that kind of thing. So, you know, my experience has been more, I think, curiosity about her and her experience. Like, I would say probably our friends are more interested in understanding her experience coming to Ireland, in Ireland, in things like the direct provision centres and of the process and all that kind of stuff. That's definitely more where they come from in it.
Yeah, and you probably have a greater insight because there's so much noise at the moment. We just get reports and it has numbers. We don't know anything about the personal stories of people. She went through the process 4 or 5 years before she gets granted asylum. We know direct provision centres, at least they used to be the places where you waited for your asylum application to go through. Now, because there's nowhere else to go, some of them are left there for years on end. She was being evicted, essentially, wasn't she, from direct provision. And was going down to the west of Ireland, which didn't suit her education that she's trying to do to contribute to us here. Do you have any insights? What did you learn from her story? And I know we want to keep her privacy as much as we can.
Yeah, I think, like, definitely have gotten lots of insight. And some of that took time, I think, as well for her. Like, when she first moved in and we were getting to know each other, she was reluctant to kind of share any stories about some of the hard times she had when she was in direct provision. And some of it is just like not hard time in terms of like direct mistreatment, I would say, but it's some of it's the nature of the system, right? So she has in her time here been in, I think, 6 or 7 different centres in Ireland. So in a kind of 3.5 year period, she was being moved. They were being moved around the country. So like she arrived, she ended up in Ballsbridge, then she was moved to Kerry, then they were in Sligo, then they were in somewhere else, and then they were in Tullamore. And the problem, like, problem maybe is the wrong word for it, but the challenge with that is like, if you think about the kind of circumstance of coming into a country, you don't have anywhere else to go. Like, Marion came here on because her life was in danger. Like, she was under threat of violence, like, you know, in her home country. People were showing up to her place of work looking for her to kill her. And so, like, this was her only option. She had family in other countries. They weren't taking asylum seekers in, so she couldn't go to them. So Ireland was her only option. And you get into a centre, you start to get to know the other people in the centre, and you start to kind of form a little bit of kind of a sense of community or a sense of connection with people. And then that group is split up and sent all over the country, and then you have to restart that process again. So it's very unsettling, I think, in those early months when you're trying to sort of get a sense of Ireland, a sense of the other people that are in the same situation as you, maybe try and build a bit of connection in the place and stuff like that. So that was definitely hugely challenging in the first instances and stuff like that. Other things around, like, her education, like, she did a degree in psychology in Uganda, and she worked as a teacher and all that sort of stuff, but was essentially told her education was useless when she got here, that it wouldn't apply and she would need to start from scratch and all that kind of thing. So there seems to be very little done in terms of trying to help people convert their skills or kind of upskill in the fields that they were in. And, you know, even to the point where she was only allowed to do carer courses if she wanted to do courses initially and stuff like that. She wasn't let do anything in her field or in teaching or kind of start the journey in that process. It was like, no, you can learn to be a carer and that's it. You can go do a course in that if that's what you want to do. But equally, she has been working, like, all of this time, like, for 3.5 years of the 4-ish years she's been here. She has been working all of that time. In a creche, basically. Mm-hmm. And providing a very important service and very important kind of skills.
Absolutely need them. And it is immigrants often that are staffing our creches at the moment, and there aren't enough spaces even in the country, so we obviously need them to do this. It's an incredible story. You're more or less recommending that if people are in the privileged position enough and they have the space to do it, that they should at least consider doing this, like you have.
Definitely. Yeah, I think, like, it's a wonderful thing to do for somebody, and I would say this even prior to Mariam, like, with my friend and stuff like that, being in a privileged position to help somebody out does give you a great sense of, like just goodwill in the world, right? Like, that you are putting some good into the world and that you're opening up your home. Outside of that, like, it has given me a new perspective on other people's experience in Ireland and trying to get an understanding of how to, like, interact with things, and then just, like, different cultures and different foods and, you know, different customs and all that sort of stuff, and like, interesting conversation about those sort of things and different experiences. Like, it's been an incredibly enriching experience in that sense, I think, for myself and Natalie in particular. We have lots of great, there's, like, fun conversations, to be honest with you, with Mariam around the, you know, she comes home from work and she's like, so an Irish person used this phrase with me today and I have no idea what they meant by it. what the hell were they talking about? And you're like, oh yeah, they just meant hello or something like that. You know, and you're kind of like, but, like, what does it mean? It's like, I haven't a clue. We just all say it and that's what it means. Yeah. So, like, you know, you kind of have a bit of fun with that kind of stuff as well, of just, like, the cultural, like, God, isn't that funny that we never think about that? And of course, for a foreign person, it's going to be a very obvious thing that, like, it's just a very Irish way of speaking or Irish way of dealing with a problem.
We've our own twist on the English language.
yeah, exactly. It's not, you know, you can't be saying things too directly.
I'm trying to think now what sort of translations you've had to give, what kind of phrases, you know, they're saying.
Oh, well, like, the obvious ones are, like, you know, the use of the word grand and all that
grand,
kind of thing. And,
yes.
And but even she was, to give you a small one, she had a co-worker who she was struggling with, who was a bit negative, you know, sort of constantly complaining about everything, and Mariam struggles with people complaining, and she was like, I don't know how to deal with this person. It's like, you need to deal with it like an Irish person, which is, you just don't respond. You just go, ah, sure, look, that's it for you. You know, that's how it is.
That's it is.
You know, we all know people like that, and they're like, ah, yeah, sure, look, that'll be that. Like, you know, and just non-committal Irishy sayings. She's like, I don't understand. I was like, I didn't say anything, and she tried it. And she said, it works. It really works very well that I didn't have to
speak and don't say anything.
Yeah, exactly. Say loads of words without saying anything at all.
It's a fascinating story, and it feels so different to a conversation about tents along the canal, Will Foley. So I'm grateful for that, and I think it gives people something to think about and mull over, because immigration is an issue, a lot of noise about it, but it's the personal stories are really what's going on out there. And you've done something remarkably charitable yourself and Natalie, so we wish you well and Bella well, And Mariam, I don't think you've mentioned that she's constantly looking for somewhere to live, and she's looking at other rents as well, just in case that's a question people think she is taking advantage and so on.
If anybody has a small apartment anywhere in Dublin that they're willing to rent out, get in contact with the show and I'll happily arrange a viewing.
With excellent recommendations. Will, thanks a million. Look after yourself.
Thanks very much. Take care.
51551, that's the text.
From the North, text studio, followed by your message to 80889.